Muslims in many countries across the world mark the end of the fasting month of Ramadan with the Eid al-Fitr prayers. And also in our headlines, Israeli forces kill over 150 Palestinians and injure 60 others in the past 24 hours as the death toll from the regime's genocide in Gaza tops 33,300. Hello and welcome everybody here in Iranian capital Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Israel made a mistake by attacking Iran's embassy in Damascus, adding that the regime must be and will be punished for its acts of aggression. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks in an address after leading the congressional Eid al-Fitr prayers in Tehran. Ayatollah Khamenei also condemned Western countries for their support for Israel, saying they not only failed to prevent the regime from committing the crimes, rather emboldened it to commit more crimes. During his address, Iran's leader congratulated Iranians and Muslims across the world on Eid al-Fitr. Earlier, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief for Basira Press, joined us from Tehran with his take on the Iran leader's remarks about the recent Israeli attack on the country's diplomatic mission in Syria.
Obviously, this is a declaration in line with international norms that an embassy is property and considered the sovereign soil of whichever country, of any country. This is a standard across the world. So this is essentially an Israeli attack on Iranian soil. And so it is absolutely necessary that this aggressive regime be punished for it. And this is a bloodthirsty regime. And the media in the West may have the script flipped, and they try to convince people that the Islamic Republic of Iran is the one that's crazy, irrational, and bloodthirsty. But actually, Iran is very restrained, moral, and is not out to seek bloodshed. It just knows that to stop the bloodshedders, the ones who are covering the world with blood, that force needs to be met with force. There's no way to go about this in a Gandhi way. Even he himself was not instrumental to the end of British colonialism in India. So the sensible thing to do is to have a military parity with the aggressor to be able to basically put an end to their aggression, not out of their humanity, but out of their fear, because the only language they understand is force. And this goes to show that this is the only world leader in the world that bows to no one but God and fears no one but God. And that is a very, very amicable trait to have in a world filled with rulers who are really devil worshippers and servants of the devil himself.
Muslims in many countries around the world, including West Asia, are celebrating Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan. Millions of people attended congregational aid prayers in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Iraq, Syria, Egypt, Lebanon, the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen in the morning of the festive occasion. Prayers and sermons also held in cities, towns, and villages across Iran. In occupied Palestine, nearly 100,000 worshippers performed the prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque and occupied outlets despite restrictive measures by the Israeli regime. This year's Eid is being celebrated under the shadow of Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Muslims in some of the countries would mark the Eid with mass prayers on Thursday. People in Afghanistan, like the rest of Muslims around the world, are marking Eid al-Fitr at the end of the holy month of Ramadan. Afghans enjoy this festive occasion with different customary rituals. Abdullah Mirzadeh brings us more in this report.
People are heading to mosques and other religious places to attend the congregational Eid al-Fitr prayer that marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan. This is a significant religious celebration that is also observed by Muslims worldwide. On this auspicious day, Afghans, like fellow Muslims in other countries, begin with a collective prayer that resembles unity.
The tradition our Prophet announced for Eid is doing ablution, wearing neat clothes and perfume, and then going to the closest mosque to attend the congregational prayers and ask for God's blessings.
This is the day God pays us the reward of fasting in Ramadan. also a day for unity and brotherhood for us. That's why on this day all Muslims are happy.
Eid al-Fitr is a time of joy, gratitude and community service, and it is traditional for people to go and visit relatives after the prayer. But it is also the Islamic tradition not to forget the needy. That is why on this day Zakat al-Fitr or Fitrana, a charitable donation in the form of food or money, is given to the poor by heads of the families.
It's a day of happiness for Muslims, also a day to reunite and make bonds. People on this day visit their relatives. They have meals together and sometimes go to a small picnic.
On 8, Zakat al-Fitr must be handed to the poor and needy. It is obligatory for Muslims to pay this prior to attending the congregational prayers.
After a month of prayer, devotion and self-control during Ramadan, Muslims celebrate the accomplishment of their sacred duties on Eid al-Fitr, a day that marks the end of Ramadan.
Muslims consider Eid al-Fitr as a divine blessing that arrives after a month of fasting from dawn to dusk. Eid al-Fitr, or the holiday of breaking the fast, is among major Islamic events celebrated across the Islamic world. Abdullah Mirzad, Kabul.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip performed the Eid al-Fitr prayers despite continued Israeli strikes and shelling. Let's listen to some of the Gaza residents about this auspicious day and how they celebrate it despite the hardships.
The early hour of Eid al-Fitr prayed on the rubble of this mosque and in the street. The Israeli occupation deprived Palestinians from praying in their mosques.
During Eid last year, there was no war. Today we are entering the seventh month of the war. Al-Fara Mosque last year was still here. But this year, it has been targeted 2 or 3 weeks before the start of Ramadan.
Despite the pain and massacres, we will show our happiness in these difficult circumstances. We don't care about the war. We will leave Eid like other Muslim countries despite the pain and siege. We will leave this Eid and show our happiness to the displaced people and families of martyrs and detainees.
This day for me is heartbreaking compared to last Eid. I look at my children and I feel heartbroken. When I sit with them and I start to cry, feeling sad for the days that have passed, I remember last Eid and I remember this Eid. Last Eid, I was surrounded by my children, looking at them with joy. But today I am injured, unable to move or go anywhere.
Palestinians continue to face an endless nightmare of death and destruction in Gaza, where U.S.-Israeli genocide is now in its seventh month. Israeli aircraft and artillery fire continue in various parts of the Gaza Strip, targeting homes and gatherings of displaced people. In the latest Israeli airstrike, at least 14 civilians were killed in Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 153 civilians have been killed and 60 others injured across the besieged strip in a matter of 24 hours. Meanwhile, civil defense workers say they've recovered the bodies of 409 Palestinians from Al-Shifa Medical Complex in the north and the city of Khan Yunis in the south. The operations were made possible after Israeli forces pulled out from the southern city and ended their siege on the hospital. Since the start of the U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Palestinians, over 33,300 people have been killed in Gaza. Moti Abu Mosabe joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala to give us an update on the situation in the war-ravaged Palestinian territory.
Actually, as you know, that today marks the first day of the Al-Eid of Al-Eid days after Ramadan actually ended, and the people actually welcomed these days with more devastation, with more destruction, and more airstrikes that are still hitting different areas of Gaza Strip. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre against the Palestinian people in the central area of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli warplanes targeted and destroyed a residential hospital building claiming the lives of at least 14 Palestinian women and its children. They were completely killed and unalived over that attack. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces also continue their attacks against Gaza City, whereas Ashjaiya neighborhood was hit relentlessly by the Israeli warplanes. Different and several Palestinian residential buildings were completely destroyed over those relentless airstrikes. Amid fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces that managed to attack the eastern parts of Ashjaiya neighborhood. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes also resumed their airstrikes and attacks against Jabalia refugee camp. More residential buildings and houses were completely destroyed and bounded by the Israeli occupation forces. So we are talking about continuous and relentless Israeli airstrikes that are still hitting the Palestinian areas here in Gaza Strip.
The United Nations Deputy Secretary General has expressed deep concerns over the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. Amina Mohammed said in a UN press conference that the international community has lost its, quote, moral compass on Gaza. She warned that thousands of children continue to be killed and maimed in Israel's genocidal war against the Gaza Strip. The top UN official called for immediate action on the humanitarian situation in the besieged territory. Earlier, the UN Chief Antonio Guterres called for a humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. That, as a report by the UN stated, that more children have been killed in the Israeli war on Gaza than in 4 years of conflicts worldwide. Israel has faced tremendous international pressure to end its genocidal war in Gaza and allow more humanitarian aid into the starving territory as dire shortages push its population on the brink of famine. Now the United Nations says Israel is blocking far more convoys carrying food aid within Gaza than convoys carrying other kinds of aid.
UN-coordinated food deliveries are much more likely to be impeded or denied access to areas requiring coordination within Gaza than any other humanitarian mission. So this is bureaucratic language for the fact that food convoys that should be going particularly to the north, where 70% of people face famine conditions, are more likely, actually three times more likely to be denied than any other humanitarian convoy with other kinds of material. And when you put up statistics with numbers of trucks going in, saying, look at all these hundreds of trucks going in, and you put it against, look how few trucks have actually moved around with the distribution. Well, it's kind of an own goal, isn't it? Because half of the convoys that we were trying to send to the north with food were denied by the very same Israeli authority. There are opening hours at these crossings. What often happens is that things move across from Israel into Gaza, and then they sleep overnight because it's not open anymore for the Gaza side to come in and pick up trucks.
The Australian Foreign Minister says that her country will consider recognizing a Palestinian state, calling it the only way to resolve the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime.
We are now 30 years on from the Oslo Accords. 30 years on from the Accords that put Palestinian statehood at the end of a process. And the failure of this approach by all parties over decades, as well as the Netanyahu government's refusal to even engage on the question of a Palestinian state, have caused widespread frustration. So the international community is now considering the question of Palestinian statehood as a way of building momentum towards a two-state solution.
Penny Wong made the remarks in her speech at the Australian National University on Tuesday. She rejected notions by some countries that the recognition of Palestine would be rewarding resistance groups. She claimed that Israel's security depends on a two-state solution. It echoes calls from the UK and Spain. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron recently said that recognizing a Palestinian state, including at the UN, would make a two-state solution irreversible. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez also stressed that a Palestinian state is in Europe's geopolitical interest. The so-called two-state solution has long been the basis of talks between the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli regime, but the process stalled as Israel continued its expansionist agenda and settlement activities on the occupied territories in violation of international law. When it comes to Iran's retaliation for the Israeli strike on Iran's embassy in Damascus, there are lots of speculations when, where, and how Iran is going to respond. We've taken a closer look at the issue in our explainer program.
The Israeli regime terrorist attack on Iran's consular section in Syria's Damascus was not only a gross violation of international law, it has opened the door for a retaliatory measure by Iran. Both Israel and the U.S. are bracing for a military reaction. The question is, what kind of reaction, when, and where? Well, Israel's terrorist attack on Iran's consular building, resulting in the death of 13, which included two top Iranian military officials, is a clear violation of the Vienna Convention of 1961. The convention states embassies are considered the sovereign territory of the country they represent, their security inviolable, meaning never to be broken, infringed, or dishonored. In that light, this is what the U.S. has said when it comes to attacks on embassies. The United States considers its own embassies and consulates abroad, as well as foreign countries' embassies and consulates in the U.S., to have a special status. It further added, an attack on an embassy is considered an attack on the country that it represents. That's what the U.S. State Department has said. Well, responses by Iran have been quick without giving away the time or place. Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said, Iran's brave men will punish Israel. We will make the Zionist regime regret this crime. Then comes the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi. Well, he has said, this unfair crime won't go unanswered, echoing the call made by Iran's leader. Then the Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Hossein Bagheri, promised what he has called maximum damage, to use his words, and also days of the Zionist regime are numbered. The U.S. has not gone off scot-free either. The Deputy Chief of Staff of the Iranian President, Mohammad Jamshidi, wrote, the Islamic Republic of Iran, in a written message, warned U.S. leadership not to get dragged in Netanyahu's trap for the U.S. Stay away so you won't get hurt, is what he said in his X account. Well, the U.S. has confirmed receipt of the message from the Islamic Republic, saying, quote, as Iran noted publicly, we received the message from them. We responded by warning Iran not to use this as a pretext to attack U.S. personnel and facilities. We did not ask. Well, the panic the U.S. and Israel are feeling are in plain sight from the way the media is reporting on Iran's revenge attack. These headlines that you see over here are testament to that and are proof that they are actually panicked. The media, however, is in the dark as to when and where this attack will take place, just like Israeli and U.S. officials. And that's different than how the media has covered Israel's and U.S.'s military threats against Iran in the past. From U.S.'s all options are on the table to Israel's military threats over the years and decades, actually. These threats have also included nuclear ones. Let's not forget, Israel has been behind attacking Iran's nuclear sites and assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists as well. Looking for clues where Iran might hit? Well, here's a flashback. Back in the year 2013, Iran's leader threatened to destroy Tel Aviv and Haifa if Israel dared to attack Iran, saying sometimes the leaders of the Zionist regime threaten us. They should know that if they attack us, we will turn Tel Aviv and Haifa into wastelands. And here's another clue of where Iran might hit. During a war game called the Great Prophet 17 in December of 2021, Iran tested a wide variety of weapons, as you see in this video, which included ballistic missiles. Aside from the awesome display, the target of the missiles was a structure that it hit, which then exploded. That structure that you see there, that's Israel's Dimona nuclear reactor.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
How
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
نقیم الدین ولا تتفرقوا فیه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the first sermon delivered on April 22nd, 2023 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the Eid al-Fitr prayer in Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah alayh, Musalla in Tehran. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, the Lord of the worlds. Praise be to Allah, who created the heavens and the earth, and made darkness and light. Yet those who reject faith hold others as equal with their Lord. The Quran, chapter 6, verse number 1. We praise you, seek your help, beseech you, seek your forgiveness, and send peace and greetings upon your beloved, the master of your creation, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and upon his pure, immaculate, infallible household, the chosen guides, especially the remnant of God on earth. And peace be upon the Imams of the Muslims, those who protect the oppressed and guide the faithful. I congratulate all faithful Muslim brothers all over the world and the great nation of Iran and you who pray on the blessed occasion of Eid al-Fitr.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I congratulate you on spending a fruitful month of Ramadan full of divine generosity this year. The month of Ramadan this year was a very delightful and lively Ramadan. In this month, there was prayer, supplication, and tawassul, intercession, especially on the blessed nights of Qadr. Keeping all-night soul-stirring vigils by the youths and the warm tears that trickled out of the blessed eyes of our pure young people were truly outstanding. Meetings and gatherings of teaching and learning spiritual lessons, Quran meetings and recitations of the Quran in all parts of the country were, thank God, more outstanding than ever before during this year. The presence of people in martyrs, flower gardens, martyrs' ceremonies, in gatherings, in religious groups, and in mosques was a noticeable presence. The faithful help that people provided in this month, helping orphans, the needy, and the poor, I mean one of the most important duties in the month of Ramadan is this public presence and being by the side of the underprivileged and the poor.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
In May 1945, a group of experts prepared a base to detonate 100 tons of TNT. They were busy finding an appropriate criterion to measure a huge bomb in Alamogordo, New Mexico. The volume of the explosives should have been so large to simulate the main test. In the middle of all this, the differences of opinion between two groups of scientists over the secretive Manhattan Project grew larger. This group of scientists, who were supposed to change the mid-20th century's fate, could not reach an agreement on a certain issue. Most of them were of the opinion that after making an atomic bomb, the United States should put its power on display at night for Japanese envoys in order to make the Japanese emperor surrender by threatening him with the bomb. However, theoretical physicist Edward Teller insisted on testing the atomic bomb on a city to learn about its effects on its population.
The American people in their
The only thing that could put an end to the differences was the speech by then U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt for the scientist. It tipped the balance in favor of Teller.
Among other things, and at the climax, he said, "You scientists are blamed for the weapons to be used. But I tell you that if you now won't work on weapons, the freedom of the world will be lost." Now, you know, I had the feeling that Roosevelt was talking to me. I was there when the letter was signed that awoke his interest in nuclear energy. I thought I knew he was talking about nuclear energy. Of the 2,000 scientists there, I felt he was talking to me.
Some people consider Edward Teller as a clear example of a mad scientist. Many critics believe that Stanley Kubrick was inspired by Edward Teller to create the notorious character Dr. Strangelove.
The report, my conclusion, was that this idea was not a practical deterrent for reasons which at this moment must be all too obvious.
Then you mean it is possible for them to have built such a thing?
Mr. President, the technology required is easily within the means of even the smallest nuclear power. It requires only the will to do so.
After the TNT explosion test, it was eventually decided that the first bomb should go off in Alamogordo, which is located 230 miles south of New Mexico in Los Alamos. The operation was codenamed Trinity. The codename comes from the belief in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in Christianity. They were planning to launch the largest massacre of human beings in the name of Jesus. This 21-ton bomb was 200 times stronger than the calibration test. The light was so intense that could immediately cause blindness. It was visible within the radius of 16 kilometers. It melted the sands in the desert and turned them into green crystals. The radioactive effects remained in the region for 50 years. Before the bomb was tested, two other bombs named Little Boy and Fat Man were secretly taken to Oceania to be prepared for an attack on two Japanese cities. It was 8:15 a.m. local time on August 6, 1945. The first bomb, Little Boy, was dropped on Hiroshima by a bomber named Enola Gay. For the bomber to have enough time to flee the explosion, they dropped the bomb via a parachute. To make the detonation stronger, the bomb was set to go off 576 meters above the ground. Those who saw Little Boy explode mid-air from a distance said they saw a new sun in the sky. After the blast, two-thirds of the buildings in Hiroshima, including steelmaking and industrial factories, were completely destroyed. The only thing that was left standing in the city was the Hiroshima Prefectural Industrial Promotion Hall. The explosion happened on top of the building's dome, and as it was within the central focus of the blast, it was not completely devastated. The moment the bomb went off, about 100,000 residents in Hiroshima died on the spot. While Japan was in shock and the Japanese people had almost realized that they were defeated, then U.S. President Harry Truman announced that this bomb was just a warning. 3 days later, another bomb was detonated in Nagasaki, which claimed the lives of 40,000 people in that city. The next day, Japan conceded defeat and surrendered to U.S. conditions to end the war. In the following years, more people succumbed to injuries sustained after the explosion due to radiation. Even though the U.S. honored its forces who were involved in the Manhattan Project and the agents in the carnage were awarded, the events pushed the public to rise up against nuclear weapons. The harms caused by the newly invented elements were not always sudden and tangible like atomic bombs. The start of nuclear war dated back to 50 years before when radioactive material was first discovered. In the spring of 1896, Marie Curie and her husband, Pierre Curie, discovered the amazing characteristics of some mineral stones, including uranium. They realized that the elements in the stones emit radiations that are not visible but pass through many barriers. The radiation was named gamma. After her husband's death, Marie Curie continued her research in 1910. It led to the discovery of radium as a new radioactive element.
Madame Curie.
The discovery made her the first woman to receive the Nobel Prize twice. But the award cost Marie Curie a lot. Many doctors say she was a victim of radioactive material, especially radium, during her experiments in the lab. The possibility was raised in the following years because back then nuclear scientists did not know anything about the harmful effects of nuclear material. It caused bigger catastrophe. The discovery of radium among natural radioactive elements with the half-life of about 1600 years left everyone in astonishment. The element's strange radiation added new color to advertisement in the West. Since the damage caused by the element and its radiation hadn't come to light yet, opportunistic traders sought to fulfill people's demands with these elements. They claimed that this dangerous material can help him live longer and healthier, so they introduced it to people's daily lives. They were used in the most sensitive cosmetic and hygienic products, including body lotions, lipsticks, toothpaste, and even water, bread, and chocolate. They claimed that radium as an ingredient in products is considered something positive. On the other hand, in 1917, the United States had just been involved in World War I. The army needed clocks whose hands were luminous at night in the dark. So factories across the U.S. took up the job and started producing clocks. To paint the tiny impact numbers on the clock's screen, they instructed female workers to press the tip of the brush with their lips in order to keep it tiny. They were told that working with radium paint was not hazardous. After a while, some of the workers were diagnosed with strange diseases. They would go to the dentist to pull their decayed teeth, but not only wouldn't they be cured, their teeth would get injured. Things gradually got worse. After dentists touched their jaws, they would get injured. Many of them had cancerous tumors in their bones and they would easily break. The first person who died was a 25-year-old woman named Amelia Maggia, nicknamed Molly. She succumbed to the disease in less than a year. The doctors didn't have an answer to her mysterious death. Gradually, as more and more female workers came down with illness, they pieced together the puzzle and found out that radium was the reason behind the deadly disease. Although after 5 or 6 years in the mid-30s, advertising products that contained radioactive element and using them in products were altogether banned, their effects continued to last. After the atomic bombing in the World War, the radium girls and similar incidents like the Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine in 1986 and the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster in 2011 after the 8.9 strong earthquake, the international community rose up against nuclear energy. But the question is, why do countries, even Japan that was subject to the biggest atomic curse, not give up nuclear energy? Why does a country like Iran make so much effort and spend so much money to achieve such an apparently dangerous energy? West Asia is known for its wars. The wars were initially waged under different excuses, but they usually pursue the same goal, and that is oil. The United States' latest direct war in the region was launched in 2003. The U.S. invaded Iraq under the pretext that the country possessed weapons of mass destruction, like biological and nuclear bombs. But after years of war and bloodshed, no weapons that were used as a pretext to invade the country were found. Even though no unconventional weapons were found in the country, it was rich in oil resources that was hugely extracted. After the invasion, oil was extracted and used to push U.S. policies and economy forward. The U.S. dealt with Iraq and raised accusations that are somehow similar to Israel's behavior vis-a-vis Iran.
This is a few. That Iran has another secret facility in Tehran, a secret atomic warehouse for storing massive amounts of equipment and material from Iran's secret nuclear weapons program. We exposed the site of Iran's secret atomic archive. It's right here, in the Shorabad district of Tehran. Today, I'm revealing the site of a second facility, Iran's secret atomic warehouse. It's right here, in the Turquzabad district of Tehran, just 3 miles away.
The Turquzabad carpet washing center was Netanyahu's last trick for the media to get the international community on board his Iranophobia scheme for, quote, possessing nuclear weapons. But the Israeli regime did not stop there at the media campaign level. To date, it has assassinated top Iranian nuclear scientists. He's someone who doesn't want to realize that based on numerous inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, and the religious views of the Iranian leader, it is not after nuclear weapons.
As of today, I can state that Iran is implementing its nuclear-related commitments. We have had access to all the sites and locations which we needed to visit.
So why does Israel keep insisting on the accusation and pursue such confrontational policies with Iran to stop the country from reaching nuclear technology? Is it possible that the objections are just excuses? Just like what happened in Iraq? How can the energy benefit Iran that the Israeli regime does everything it can to stop it from reaching the technology? It was exactly 6 years after the first and last nuclear bomb blast that a national lab in Idaho was lit up by only 4 200-watt light bulbs. Even though the EBR-1 project's goal was not to generate electricity, it corroborated theories concerning producing electricity from nuclear energy. The system, which was more complicated than making an atomic bomb, was later named nuclear reactor. The reactors could easily provide electricity for a city or more without constructing huge dams or consuming thousands of tons of charcoal and emitting pollutant gases. 70 years after the 4 famous light bulbs in Idaho were lit up, a little further away, Bill Gates, as the richest man on the planet and the owner of Microsoft, was investing on nuclear reactors that could work for 60 years after fueling just once. Today, reactors have considerably reduced consumption of oil condensates for producing energy. For example, the 1,000-megawatt reactor in Iran's Bushehr has saved 47 million barrels of oil that would otherwise be used for generating electricity in 7 years. In Europe, generating electricity is the foremost goal of using nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, but in Asia, there is a more burning issue, and that is water. West Asia is among the driest regions in the continent. it has only 1% of fresh water resources in the world. Many analysts believe that the next wars in the region will not be over oil. They say water is a serious concern in this part of the world. In this dry region, Israel has managed to export its agricultural products to all across the world, besides meeting 95% of its population's demands. The Israeli regime does not have underground water resources or many rivers. However, it has tipped environmental balance in its own favor by using nuclear technology to rein in nature. On the shores of the Red Sea, the saline water is desalinated for agriculture and drinking. As an example, Sorek, as the largest water treatment plant in the world, located 15 kilometers south of Tel Aviv, can purify 230 million cubic meters of water and tackle water shortage to a great extent. This amount of water is equal to the water Iran annually receives from the Karajan-Latian dams for drinking and agriculture in Tehran and Elbourz provinces, with a population of about 15 million people. Even though only 20% of the land occupied by the Israeli regime is arable, today it has become an agricultural hub.
This is the finished product, desalinated water. And according to the officials here at the plant, it's a more complete water than water that hasn't had the saline removed, because in the process of desalination, minerals are added back.
It seems the Israeli regime and Washington are seeking to stop Iran from accessing nuclear energy, not because they are worried it might make a nuclear bomb, but they are concerned that Iran might achieve the nuclear technology that can strengthen its independence and tackle millions of Iranians' needs. Water and energy are among the most vital necessities in agriculture and other industries, and even if a country like Iran does not need nuclear energy to fulfill its needs, it still cannot forego the energy. If the fruit produced by farmers goes bad before reaching the market, it will bring nothing but financial loss and physical exhaustion. Many kinds of fruit cannot resist against natural bacteria and fungus as they quickly go bad. Today, the key to reach the market, especially the international one, is in the hand of irradiation. Thanks to nuclear technology, radiation technology has been around for 60 years and is used in the agriculture industry. Exposing fruits to the light emission of radiation for a short time can destroy the larvae and bacteria in fruits and increase its shelf life. Today, many agricultural products and even foods like strawberry that have very short shelf life are exported to other countries. Exposing fruits to the gamma ray at entry points and quarantine centers of a country can stop the spread of insects and pests.
We have to look at the taste, the color, the granulometry. Is there some foreign material? And also we look at the microbiology. Spices can be contaminated up to 1 million bacteria per gram. And with the irradiation, it can reduce by 99.9%. Other treatment will not offer that kind of reduction. Irradiation for us will not change the taste, the color, will not leave any residue, and also is really lowering the microbiological count.
When we piece together different problems like medical treatment, industrial experiments, and other issues a country can resolve by using the nuclear technology, we find out that there is a good reason behind Iran's political and economic battle to achieve the technology. today if a country wants to guarantee its economic, scientific, and technological future. It needs to step in this field.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We have been looking at giving our brothers and sisters in faith the moral support they require throughout the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhum assalam. And we did mention previously, even though quickly, which I would like to elaborate on more, is the dua that we have to do for our brothers and sisters in faith when they are absent. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi as-salam, he says, أَسْرَعُ الدُّعَاءِ نَجَاحًا لِلْإِجَابَةِ. When it comes to du'as, some of them succeed and some of them don't. They succeed and fail depends on whether they are answered or not. That's the formula, the ground the Imam is trying to lay, the foundation he's trying to lay for us. That the du'as could be successful, could not be successful, depending on the ijaba. Then he says, Asra'ul du'a'i, the fastest of these du'as to get answered is how, O Imam? He says, Du'a'il akhi li akhi, the supplication and du'a of one brother to his other brother. In what condition, Ya Imam? بظهر الغيب, when it is in secret. You know your friend is having a problem in the house. You know he has financial issues. You know he has a disease. You know he has his problems with his kids. You know he has a problem of this and that. And what do? He hasn't said nothing to you. No one did. You go to the masjid, you pray to a rak'ah, and you say, Oh Allah, Fulan is my brother. I love him. And I wish and I ask you with the infinitive mercy and compassion that you elevate his status and you solve his problem for him. The Imam says, this is the key. That is the cheat that you can get the dua answered quickly. وَإِذَا بَدَأَ بِالدُّعَاءِ لِأَخِيهِ And once the person is doing the supplication and he just began his supplication, فَيَقُولُ لَهُ مَلَكٌ مُوَكَّلًا بِهِ There's an angel that Allah will assign to you as you start to supplicate to your brother. What does this angel say? Ameena wa laka mithluh. He says, Inshallah, Ameen. And the same goes to you. This is absolutely beautiful and cute when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala saying, listen, you have problems, whatever it might be, financial, economical, family. Do dua for your friend. And not only would I help and elevate your friend's problem solve it for him, but I will have a malak that is praying for you to give you the same. Do you see how this works? Now, let us take a short break and then let's elaborate more on that.
آیت الله جوادی آملی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, the keys of life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه. چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book, مفاتیح, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است. چه فرون دماغ و سواب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree
امام اونطوری که این رو گفته دارم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. So before the break, we were saying that Allah assigns an angel to you once you start praying for your brother in faith in secret. And that malik says Ameen, which means he says Inshallah, which he says Inshallah Allah will do this for you. You ammin ala du'aak. And also he says the same goes to you, bro. Now, why does the malik say or the angel say the same to you? We know. We have another hadith that says, or Allah says, supplicate to me, id'uni bidu'ain aw bilisanin, supplicate to me in a tongue that you have not committed a sin with. Now, O Lord, this is not going to be easy. How do I supplicate to you in a tongue that I have not committed a sin with? Lie, I don't know, foul language, something I said wrong, something I said that was haram. And then when the Prophet asked Allah, Oh Allah, how do I do so? He said, pray for your believing brother in faith. And he's like, how is that related, Oh Allah? He said, when you pray for your brother in faith, what I will do is I will assign an angel that will pray for you.
So the angel says, "Oh Allah," Sayyid, he said, "Oh Allah, give Fulan $1,000 or at least elevate him or elevate his status, solve his problem, cure his disease." And I have a disease myself, I have debt myself. So the Malik would pray for me. He says, "Oh Allah, cure Sayyid out of his disease. Oh Allah, give Sayyid the wealth that he requires." Now the angel has prayed for me in a tongue which I have never committed a sin in. Another merciful, beautiful, gorgeous, sweet loophole from Allah himself to show